Chapter 12. 4 weeks later, Jordan was surprised to learn that Ari named him as his beneficiary on the life insurance policy he had through his employer. People had taken up a separate collection, which Miranda said she would personally give to Jordan when he could meet her to turn in the laptop and files Ari had brought home. Before he dropped anything off, though, Jordan used that opportunity of saved passwords to create backups of everything he could think of. Jordan had also spent the weeks managing the social media feeds of his boyfriend's private accounts. He didn't respond to each one individually, but would make daily thank you updates and remind people that he'd be shutting down the accounts soon. As soon as he was ready to let go, that is. The unexpected insurance windfall meant that Jordan could stay in the Bowery apartment until he was ready to move out. He had no idea Ari named him as the beneficiary. He was feeling the pangs of guilt that maybe they should have made more progress in their relationship. They could have gotten legally married, but he didn't think they were at that point yet. Sure, they were getting there, but Ari must have been in that comfort zone already. Within the last week, Jordan packed up a box of old photo albums, mementos, and some jewelry to give to Nora. She wanted Jordan to have everything, so they compromised. She'd get the before Jordan things that would have some sentimental value, and he'd do what he wanted with the rest. Most of Ari's clothes would be donated. The rest of the apartment was filled with things Jordan would need in this new phase of his life. All the cookware and plates, towels, furniture, everything in the apartment were staples. And if the next person in his life wants everything to have a fresh, clean slate, he'd deal with it then. But until that happens, he needed places to sit and pots to cook in. Jordan messaged Max and asked if she had time before her cleaning jobs to go with him to the wealth management office. Max. Yeah, sure. Jordan. I'll meet you in Midtown. There's a French bakery a couple doors down. I'll get you some sugar. Max. Deal. The refrigerated displays were brimming with glorious sweets. Eclairs, tarts, fresh donuts, and quiche. This place had everything sinful except for booze. It was a popular brunch spot, but the takeout kept the place hopping mad all day long. Jordan knew Ari frequented it guilt-free, since Jordan's cooking was far from decadent. Okay, so why did you ask me to come along on this rather personal errand? Max picked apart a chocolate-filled croissant that made a mess of pastry flakes. I'm alone all day. I work from home. I hardly ever have to meet with real people. What, don't you want to see me? Jordan delighted in teasing her. He savored 3 bite-sized mini muffins and his French roast coffee. This was the sort of place people wish heaven was like. No, man, you know I love seeing you, but seriously, this seems like something so personal. Listen to me, gorgeous. You are my friend, and I need one right now. What are you talking about? Max took the giant strawberry garnish and used it to scoop out some of the chocolate before biting into juicy goodness, slurping without one bit of embarrassment. I'm feeling disconnected. I know I have a lot of friends, but I don't know which ones I can trust, except for you. Like, you're my only real friend, with a capital F. The people from the clubs, they don't really have anything to do with me except to party. He popped the last bite of muffin in his mouth, tasting all the oats, brown sugar, and a cranberry. Max nibbled the remains of the strawberry close to the stem to finish it off. I thought you had tie. Thought you were close. She air-quoted the emphasis for his benefit. We've had fun, but it's not meaningful. I'm grateful for all he's done with hosting my party and the Nari's tribute. He even let me see the security footage, but... Don't leave me hanging. It's because of things I saw on that camera that I'm suspicious of Ty, too. And Ray, don't forget. I won't forget what you did to get Ray talking. You're like a superhero, like Wonder Woman, rushing in to help me out and facing a piece of shit like Ray on your own. Dude, I was no Wonder Woman. I was fucking scared and couldn't wait to get out of there. But you did it. You did it for Ari. That means everything. You faced that fear to help me figure this out. I have all these puzzle pieces and don't know how they fit together now. Max looked at her phone as she did about every 2 minutes habitually. She was nonstop on social media, exceptionally tuned into the buzz around the world. You better get going if you're meeting that woman at 1. You're coming with me. It's just a handoff. Probably won't go farther than the lobby. Fine, she huffed. Let's go see the normies, but only if I can dialogue it. That was Max's fun game. As people walked by or sat at tables minding their own business, she'd narrate a complete scene with outrageous, usually embarrassing fake dialogue. to illustrate her talent when a man in a suit held the door open for a woman in a tight pencil skirt and blazer, Max used a deep, manly voice to say, "Let me get this for you." Then she made her voice not too sultry, but feminine and snarky, "Least you could do since I took it in the ass on our lunch break." The floor of the lobby sparkled in ways that made visitors feel like they were the first ones ever to grace the building with their presence. The granite walls were speckled with minerals, making them look like diamonds cascading from the floors above. There were two metal detectors operated by security guards. Another set of security guards were stationed at the check-in counter, where they checked IDs and registered guests. Jordan was there only to drop off the laptop and a couple file folders he found in Ari's leather carrying bag. He wasn't about to hand over that bag, so he relocated the power cords to a plastic shopping bag and carried everything else in his arms. Max was finished with her coffee, but clutched the paper cup for comfort. She looked around without seeming obvious that she was inspecting the corporate machine up close. People were too busy and self-absorbed to be concerned with her anyway. She was familiar with buildings like this because of her cleaning job, but she couldn't imagine being dressed so oppressively to conform. Everything from her tattoos and piercings to the pink and bleached hair told the 8-to-5ers that she wasn't staying long. "I'm here to give these to Miranda Johansson." Jordan put the items on the marble counter next to the signature log. The two guards looked like he was causing such a major inconvenience to their routine. In fact, they looked like that to everyone that asked them anything. "Sign here." "I'm not staying, I'm just dropping." "Sign here." Jordan filled out the next empty line on the registry. He was ever so tempted to write in a fake name. He didn't, though, but he smirked and muttered, "Whatever," under his breath. "You too." The guard's chin lifted in Max's direction. "Dude, I'm not staying either." "Doesn't matter. You're in the building. You sign in." Max complied as well. She and Jordan handed over their IDs to the guards, both of whom were stone-faced while going through their routine. The guard on the left picked up the phone and punched in an extension. "Miss Johansson will be down in a few minutes. You can wait over there." The guard pointed to a mini-cafe area with an unimpressive coffee kiosk and several small tables and chairs next to the enormous windows overlooking the bustling downtown street. "Holy crap!" Max stared like a deer in headlights. "What?" Jordan swiveled in the hard metal seat to see what caught Max's eye. Miranda Johansson walked off the escalator with the poise of a beauty pageant contestant. She was decked out in a white suit. The only thing out of place was the unattractive accessory required of all personnel, the badly colored security badge that was clipped to the pocket of her blazer. Even the photo of her looked beautiful instead of like a typical mugshot. She looked over at the guards behind the counter, and one of them pointed in the direction of Max and Jordan. Her perfectly French manicured hands stopped tapping on her phone in order for her to extend her hand. "Jordan, thank you for coming. How are you holding up?" "I guess as well as to be expected. I'm sorry it took me so long to get all this back to you. I couldn't find anything else in Ari's stuff." Miranda rifled through the file folders. She paused when she found the one with WSS on the typed label. "This is exactly what I was looking for. Can I get you some coffee?" "No, we just had some. Thanks, though. We'll get going."
"Before you leave, I'm here to give you this."
Miranda pulled an envelope from her pocket. It had been folded a couple of times to fit in her designer suit. Women's clothes, no matter how expensive, lacked decent-sized pockets.
"I'm sorry it's all folded, but it's what's inside that matters."
Jordan took the plain white envelope devoid of corporate letterhead. Inside was a check for $5,000.
"This is incredible, Miranda. What's this for?"
"It's for you, a gift from Ari's co-workers. You can do whatever you want. Take a long vacation if you need it, but we wanted you to have it. Ari was very well liked here." Miranda shook both their hands and gave a tight smile to Max, saying it was nice to meet her, which Max didn't believe for a second. Out on the sidewalk, heading towards the subway, Max began questioning Jordan.
"That sure is something. What are you going to do with all that cash?"
"I have no idea. Like she said, maybe I need a vacation. I just can't believe it. I never met any of those people before his funeral." The two crossed the street in a rush of pedestrians. A cab kept inching forward to make a right turn, asserting position of street dominance. "Not in this city, pal." One of the pedestrians pounded the hood with his fist as the cab came within an inch of him. Max and Jordan skirted the angry man and bounced down the stairs to the subway.
"Have you come up with any theories other than Ray shooting Ari over a buy?" There is something. I can't really explain it. It's like my sixth sense is telling me there's more to the story than drugs. The cops haven't charged Ray yet either. I think I would have heard about it by now if they had. It was one of the blissful times of day where there was ample room in the subway cars. Jordan tried his best to avoid traveling during rush hour. Even thinking about a mass of strangers smashing into him in a confined space stirred his claustrophobia. The only time he wanted that many people around him was on a dance floor. What's the plan now? Are you just going to drop it and let the cops fail at their jobs? Not yet. I need to get more out of Ty. I found something strange in the images he let me see for his new vodka. Strange how? I don't think he expected me to notice, but there are two different labels. It's a subtle difference. You really have to look closely at them. Why is that strange? Wouldn't an artist give someone a choice? Max leaned forward, resting her hands on her knees in her crisscrossed position. This didn't look like a choice of A or B. Both images had small illustrations of generic college administration buildings with columns in the front and domed rooftops, but the number of columns was different. I bet if I showed you, you wouldn't even notice the difference. So why would Ty have someone do that intentionally? I don't know. I mean, we talked about limited edition batches of vodka, but when you do something special like that, you want it noticeable. He's taken my advice and will give the exclusive cases a different product identity. In that circumstance, a whole new label is in order, with the new product name and change the colors a little so you know it's part of the same line, but it would stand out when the bottles are near each other. They exited the M train and went up the stairs at Houston and 2nd, leaving the distinctive smell of subway urine behind them. Jordan's aviator sunglasses had more style than Max's chunky plastic ones, but then again, hers were only $10. It was a short walk back to his building on a gorgeous early fall day. There was the hint of the smell of decaying leaves coming from the small trees meticulously spaced along the sidewalk. When we get upstairs, I'll show you what I mean. Hey, man, I believe you. I just don't know any reason why it'd be important to Ty. I'll call him. He should be getting things ready for the New York Spirits competition. Dude, did I tell you? Tell me what? Jordan looked back at her, his eyebrows furrowed as he silently questioned how he was supposed to read her mind. I got that gig. I'll be the DJ for that. It'll be great because they're hiring an audio company, so all I have to worry about is my own setup, my own job for a change. It'll be sweet. That's great news. Now come inside and make yourself at home. The apartment seemed dark compared to the outside world, but by 7 it would be pitch black outside. Max slid onto the couch, letting her backpack drop to the floor without care. She was the opposite of Miranda Johansson's pulled-together chic presence. I don't have to be home for a couple more hours to get changed for work, if you don't mind me hanging out. Having your company is always a delight, even when you're moody as hell. Max flicked a throw pillow at Jordan like a frisbee. He got swatted in the butt by it as he walked to the kitchenette. More coffee? Nah, just some water. All that sugar I had made me thirsty, and I'm not moody today. What gives? No, not today, but trust me, you have your moments. Anyway, come over here and look at these images. It took some effort, but Max dragged her ass off the couch and headed towards Jordan, who was proffering a bottle of water. He dropped onto the desk chair and brought his computer to life by tapping the space bar. See? Here and here. He pointed to the illustrated buildings on the label designs. The columns aren't the same. What does that mean? I have no idea, but I'm sure it means something to Ty. So why would he have shared it with you? I think he was just careless to think I wouldn't notice, but making designs is what I do for a living. Spotting this is like when people spot the mistakes on film, like when someone left a bottle of water in a Downton Abbey scene. Most people would overlook it until it's pointed out. Jordan turned his head back to the monitor. He bit his lower lip while he thought about Ty's intentions. You can get into the festival easily. I'm sure I could score a +1 badge for an assistant, or I'm sure Ty would bring you along. Max rested her butt on the edge of Jordan's immaculate desk. I will take you up on that, gorgeous. I will assist my ass off for you. He smiled at Max and patted her arm a couple of times. She put a hand on his shoulder and leaned in. I'm a good boss. Your job will be to fetch me drinks and do the heavy lifting. And in return, I get what? It's your payment for me wearing that wire with Skeevy Ray. Good point. I owe you all the free assisting you ever need. Max suggested Jordan be bold about the situation and ask Ty flat out why there are two different designs for one product. He knew it would get to that point. In the meantime, they bounced theories off each other for the next hour, each one escalating in absurdity as they went along, before Max had to leave. Jordan took the opportunity to walk over to the closest branch of his bank and deposit the check for $5,000. He had an irrational fear that Ari's employer and co-workers would come back to him and say it was a terrible mix-up and the money wasn't meant for him. He felt the pangs of survivor's guilt every day. There were tons of people at Freddy's Lounge that night, but it was Ari caught in the alley and killed. The police haven't provided further information. They were taking Ray's word, and his hands were never tested for gunshot residue since they never found a weapon on him or nearby. The official story was that a lone gunman came through the alley, fired the shot, and ran away unseen by other eyewitnesses. Jordan still refused to believe it. His gut told him Ray did this. The cops dropped the ball. Not like that was unheard of. Why couldn't this be television where the cops would have detained Ray, gotten him a shitty, uninterested public defender, found a gun in a nearby dumpster with his fingerprints on it, and had a reasonably strong case? Where the hell is Columbo when you needed him?
You've been listening to Vodka O'Clock Noir by Elizabeth Amber Love from AmberUnmasked.com. Thank you for sponsoring through Patreon.com/AmberUnmasked. Music provided by ASCAP through Free Play Music, composed by David Flavin and Roland Pritzaitis.